You're listening to Jet Nation Radio, the official podcast of JetNation.com,
the largest independent fan site in the NFL.
Be sure to check out our forums and talk all things Jets with thousands of other diehard Jets fans. Now, to get you up to date on all the latest Jets news, notes, and quotes, here are your hosts, Glenn Naughton and Alex Barallo.
Good evening, Jets fans. I am Glenn Naughton. This is Jet Nation Radio. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Always much appreciated. And I am joined by my host, once again, my co-host, as always, Alex Barallo. We're going to cover some combine stuff, some little stories floating around here and there in the news. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Glenn. Thank you much. Good evening, Jet Nation. Football Christmas is almost here.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before we get started, Jet Nation Radio, let's shout out to our sponsor, Alex, and thank them, Miles Social. If you're managing a business and you need a little bit more time, you don't have enough time on your hands to run your Facebook and your Instagram and your company website and all the other, what's the new one, TikTok and all that, Twitter. Too much going on in terms of social media, but you got to be on there because that's how customers find people nowadays. Contact Miles Social. Miles Social, they'll help you manage all your business needs for your social media platforms. That's M-I-L-E Social, Miles Social. So check them out, M-I-L-E-Social.com. Check out MilesSocial.com, folks. All right, so Alex, as we discussed a couple days ago, the draft combine, the NFL combine, is less than a week away now in Indy. I mean, players will show up. They'll do some of the small stuff, the check-ins and all that, you know, over the first day or so before they really get rolling. And my understanding is it's going to be some prime time stuff this year, which I got to say I absolutely friggin' hate. Look, I understand the league is about money, but now you're trying to make it a prime time televised event to increase ratings and more money. That just means less time, for teams to get a look at players. At least I read a piece the other day that said that the way they're going to structure this is going to mean less time with the players for the teams. If that turns out to be the case, that's a disaster. That's a joke. It's stupid. Enough people watch it. It's not, I don't know. Anyway, but I'm not going to go off on that tangent. I just think it's dumb if that's what they're doing. Alex, we're going to talk about the big names that we'll be watching. And similar to what we did with the offensive, defensive side of the ball, but specifically the combine, because the combine is more about not so much a player that you love. I mean, it's that too, but the guys that competed at a lower level and you want to see how their numbers stack up, or maybe guys like Mekhi Becton, by no means a small name, but you see the way that guy moves and you almost can't believe it. So it's like, I want to see how his times come in versus the other guys, and is he really as quick as he looks for a man who weighs 370? So we'll jump right into that, Alex. But first, Alex, controversy out of Florham Park. Always controversy out of Florham Park, Alex. Le'Veon Bell got into the leftover cupcakes from Tim Hightower's failed pre-agency bid. As you know, the Jets offered Tim Hightower like $15 million a year and some birthday cupcakes. He didn't take the money or the cupcakes. Le'Veon Bell found them. He ate all of them. And somebody reportedly, it leaked, I think it was to Rich Cimini, Connor Hughes, said that the Jets felt Le'Veon Bell was fat last year. And it slowed him down. And that's the funny thing is, I saw that story. I commented on it. I didn't see the original story. I just saw it retweeted a million times, didn't see who it came from. And then I made a joke about it, the Tim Hightower, the cupcake joke. And then somebody said, oh, is it the typical Manish? Can't trust Manish. And I just kind of said, look, just because it's Manish doesn't mean it's true. And then someone else replied. They were like, actually, it wasn't Manish. It was Cimini. And Connor Hughes reported it. I said, oh, well, that changes things, because there goes the Manish is up to his old tricks narrative. Mm-hmm. Now you have Cimini reporting it. Did the Jets feel like he's fat? So clearly this, more likely than not, came from a member of the coaching staff. Is this a good idea, Alex, to trash your $17 million a year running back if you're trying to trade him? And because Samini to me, Connor Hughes to me, even though Connor, you know, Connor was all team Gase this best, and maybe that's part of why he's got to do this. He was big on the Gase bandwagon for the 32nd ranked offense in the NFL, telling us weekly how amazing he was. I don't think they're making this up. I don't think Rich Samini and Connor Hughes, if that's where it came from, I honestly should have checked the original story. This is what someone told me. That's where it came from. But whoever it came from, if it's being reported by a couple folks, then it came from somewhere. It could be that the Jets have shopped Bell and realized that what they're going to get for him is so close to worthless that they're basically, I don't know. Are they trying to make him look bad so the fans don't? So the fans aren't picked, because that seems to be the consensus on Twitter. Fans are like, better not trade him, better not trade him, better not trade him. So is this an effort to sort of win public opinion and be like, it's all right that we traded him, he's fat. What are your thoughts there, Alex?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Having a little bit of deja vu from last year when reports were coming out that he was weighing in 265. And you know what, if that's the case, maybe we'll just, you know, convert Le'Veon Bell to an edge defender and use his speed and agility and all those athletic skills to get after the quarterback rather than run the football. I mean, I can't believe we're even addressing this, but this is the Jets. Maybe they're not a football club anymore. Maybe we're going to join some sort of supermodel swimsuit tour. So everything's about measurements and body fat and how who's thin and who's fat, and this is going to turn into some sort of great celebrity reality TV show. I mean, give me a freaking break.
Well, I mean, if the Jets genuinely believe that, obviously if you're a running back and you're too fat, it is going to affect your play. I don't think they're saying the Jets are worried what he looked like. I think the implication is that that's why he didn't play well. Whereas I think we kind of universally agree he didn't play well because the offensive line was terrible. He didn't really have a chance to do anything behind that O-line.
That's what the real root of this whole situation is, with Bell's, you know, statistical numbers not being what some people had predicted or anticipated. The offensive line did not do us any justice last year. Yes, there are a handful of plays from Montgomery and Bilal Powell where they're firing out the backfield like a piston and shooting into the gap and then falling forward for, you know, a handful of yards. And that looks good and everything like that. But everybody here knows that Bell is not that type of running back. Perhaps his patient running style was also detrimental to the deficiencies that this offensive line had last year. I'm not sure. My guess is that, you know, these guys are bored. And if there are people that are saying these things, or and these are truthful, you know, testimonies from people in the front office, well, like Dan Leberfield put out today, Joe Douglas needs to get his people all in the same room and put the fear of God into them and say, loose lips will be fired. If anybody here decides to leak any more information of conversations that are having in here, you will be finding yourself a new job. Because this style of, you know, sharing horrible stories with the media is what makes us the laughing franchise that we are. And that's why people call us, you know, the circus and everything like that, is because fragments of a statement will come out from an individual and then get thrown into a story, get completely blown out of proportion. And, you know, that's the power of social media today. So do I believe it? I hope not. I think that would be really, really detrimental to the optics of this team, you know, and it just basically shows the amount of dysfunction that's going on in the background in the front office. So whomever these people are that are leaking these stories or making things up because they're bored, they got to go. And hopefully Joe Douglas can feather them out through his, you know, whatever his investigating you know, tactics are, and get these people out of here, because I'm done with it. And these TMZ and National Enquirer stories are just get really old fast.
Yeah, and I just took a look to confirm it. Like I said, somebody told me it was Samini. It was Rich Samini who Rich Simini of ESPN, formerly New York Daily News. So Simini, a lot of fans don't like him because he can be pretty snarky. You know, takes jabs at the Jets here and there where, you know, it may not be necessary. But I challenge you to write for this team as long as Rich Simini has and not feel some animosity or some angst that you want to get out now and then. But not at all a reputation for being a guy who makes stuff up or writes unfounded stories. And that's who this is coming from. It's Rich Simini saying that the Jets felt like someone told him that the Jets felt Le'Veon Bell was lost some explosiveness last year because he got too fat during the season. So there you have it.
Didn't he have a detrimental flu and lose 10 pounds in a week?
I don't know.
Well, that was another story. We know that was true? I don't want to get into that one, Alex. Reason being, that was some updates from the Wyatt account that made some accusations that it was not at all the flu, and it was a different condition that was preventing Le'Veon Bell from being able to play. And really, I mean, no one's got him on a scale. Anybody can say, yeah, I dropped 10 pounds this week because of the flu. Bell said he dropped 10. No one knows that. And what Simini is reporting is that the team felt like he got too fat. So I would, my preference would be stop ripping your best players. Isn't this the second time? It was something else. I feel like something else. That was just the Gase didn't know if he wanted Bell back or to find out from Joe Douglas if he wanted Bell back. So not the best optics in terms of the way the Jets are addressing or dealing with Le'Veon Bell this offseason. Because you could always just shut your damn mouth and not say anything at all. But instead, you give Rich Simini a phone call and say, hey, just to let you know, we thought he got fat and slow this season. So not the best situation there. But that's the Le'Veon Bell deal. Now, Alex, another thing I wanted to talk about before we get into the combine, that picture we discussed earlier off the air of the players, group of players working out, getting ready for, getting ready for the season. It's never too early. And the thing that jumped out at me, it was like 8, 10, 12 players, however many. Loved that Quincy Enunwa was there. And, man, he is a guy that, we've talked about the fact that Tremaine Johnson's going to be gone. There is the possibility Le'Veon Bell will be gone. Quincy Enunwa, the Jets can't afford to have another guy on the roster who's making, $7, $8 million, whatever he's going to be making, and just contributing nothing. They got to get him. He is such a – and rightfully so. We talk about the team as if Quincy Enunwa was not even there. We just talk about don't have a receiver, don't have a receiver, don't have a receiver, and that's kind of the way you have to approach it. But, if Quincy could get healthy and contribute, that's another $8 million where you're getting actual production instead of having eight. Tremaine Johnson's going to be a $12 million hit. You add Quincy to that. Quincy's a $5.4 million hit. And, he saves 2.4. This is all according to overthecap.com, by the way. That's a lot of money. Bell, this is why I don't think you can get rid of Bell. Bell's a $19 million hit. That would be that'd be 31. That'd be almost $40 million in dead money. But Quincy Enunwa, how important is it? And how much, if you're the Jets, can you expect anything at all out of him? Or do you just approach it as if he's not even on the roster? What's your mindset going into the offseason or going into the draft process and free agency?
Yeah, Quincy is a key factor on what the Jets are going to be able to do as far as are we going to experiment another year, seeing how healthy he can be and how long he will last and if he will make it to the field. His situation, we're tied to him contract-wise, and, he could report and pass the physical tests that they have in place and do everything by the doctors eligible for this team. And we all know that it's just, a awkward hit or, while he's working out, possibly he could end up tweaking something in his back because he does have spinal stenosis from what I've read. So, he's a huge factor on what we're going to be able to do on, retooling this offense and getting ourselves back to competitive football. In my heart, no one is tougher than Quincy Enunwa, and I love his physical play style, but as you and I both talked about last year at length, you know, perhaps he should try to be more reserved with his body so that we could actually see a 16-game season from him. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how he progresses. He didn't very much like the fact that he was fined last year for not showing up for a mandatory health evaluation. I believe it was sometime during a military day, possibly Veterans Day or something like that. And he wanted to be with his spouse and the workout, and there was some communication error, and he went to Twitter and felt very, very upset about this, and he expressed himself quite emotionally, saying that he's putting on his life on the line to try to get back to football, and there's a 50-50 shot that he can do what, you know, come back to the game, and it kind of seems like he's on the fence. Is he willing to do so? So we saw a picture of him with his teammates the other day working out at someplace called Iron. And, you know, Bless Austin was there, and Blake Cashman was present, Brian Winters, and Trayvon Wesco looked like he was the largest human being on earth and was actually standing over Nate Shepard, who's quite a large human being. So that just kind of shows you how gargantuan he is. But it was nice to see the guys getting together and working out. Maybe Quincy is going to give it a run and come back this year. And truthfully, being tied to him with all this money that we have on the table, we have to hope that he can get healthy and get better for us, because we need the weapons.
Yeah, I think it's just such a big situation for Quincy, because if he doesn't bounce back again, you know, if there's another injury, another setback, he just might be done as a pro, which might not, honestly, with all the injuries he's had, it might not be a bad thing. He's kind of, especially because Quincy just comes across as such a good, classy dude. The work ethic is there. I think he probably regretted the Twitter thing. I think that was an emotional moment where he did something which is very out of character for him to lash out and sort of go to social media to plead his case. But really just such a good dude. And you know, you root like hell for him. But, you know, I also look at it and think maybe you should just hang it up. You know, that's from the more personal side of being a fan. Just looking at these guys as people. You don't want them to suffer an even more serious injury and have it sort of that lifelong impact. But if he's going to be out there, if he's going to be healthy, if he's going to play, you know, you want to see him stay healthy, and you realize how big it would be for this team to have another weapon to include with whatever they're going to be adding come free agency and through the NFL draft. And with that being said, NFL draft, NFL combine, Indianapolis coming up next week. We can go position by position here, Alex, and you can just throw out a few names for each position. I'll throw out a few names for each position, and we'll just we'll go across the board doing that. I mean, in terms of quarterbacks, I mean, I don't know if there are any quarterbacks you're looking forward to see as a potential backup. I honestly won't be paying a great deal of attention to the quarterbacks, because that's not I don't see the Jets using a pick in that area. You're talking sort of the undrafted range. And, you know, for you personally, Alex, you're going to be watching any quarterbacks? Do you have any interest there?
I think we're good. Hopefully we don't have to go down this road for another 10 years.
Yeah, like I said, outside of the backups, there's really not a whole lot of reason to be looking at that, which is nice for a change. But now we go to running back. Who do you like? Who are the big names that, of course, we've all heard? Who are the guys that maybe we haven't talked about on the show that you're watching for whatever reason? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, my number one favorite running back in the draft this year is Eno Benjamin. I spoke about him several weeks ago, and he's from Arizona State. He's not the biggest guy. He's probably not considered a power back, but the guy is one of those people where he'll make you miss inside the phone booth. Just very, very shifty, athletic, agile, great hands, good speed, and an absolute weapon. He would definitely be, if we're going to target a running back, you know, on maybe day three, third, fourth round, maybe a fifth round pick, if he slides, I think that he would be an absolute great addition for this offense. You know, and I've mentioned some other guys, Darius Anderson on the back end, 6th, 7th round out of TCU. Really liked what I saw out of him. And to give you just one last name, you talked about him not too long ago, A.J. Dillon from Boston College, just a beast of a running back and probably one of the biggest running backs in this class, but he certainly does not move that way. Extremely athletic for a player his size.
Yeah, he's actually the top running back I was going to mention in terms of guys I'm looking forward to watching, and it's for that very reason, because when you watch him on film, he doesn't he moves so much better than you would expect him to move that I find myself asking, is he beating a bunch of bad competition? The teams that just can't tackle, or are his feet really that good? Is he really that quick? And, you know, the downside there, of course, is that I did see quite a few runs where I felt like if he had lowered his shoulder and plowed somebody over, there would have been more yardage there than if he tried to, you know, try to make a move and go around somebody. I feel like when you're coming in at 240, 250, just try to pick up some of those tough yards sometimes. I didn't see as much of that out of him as I would have liked. Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of LSU, a super interesting prospect, but he's a guy that I think he's going to go too early for the Jets to consider him, in my opinion. I don't want to see them. I think I've said before, those top four picks, that first, that second, those two thirds, that's got to be, to me, that's got to be O-line, heavy O-line, and maybe a pass rusher, depending on what happens in free agency. I certainly don't want to see a running back that early, you know, get one of these receivers, because there are so many of them available. But I don't want one in the first. But if you want to take somebody in the second or third, a wideout, I'd be fine with that, and then grab another one later in round 4 or 5. But that's another back that I'm looking forward to. Anderson out of TCU, who you mentioned, another guy that another guy that I'm looking forward to watching. Played at a good program, and I've seen the couple games I've watched of him. At times he looks like he's going to be a quality NFL back, where you kind of feel like his floor is going to be as a spot starter. But I think he's good enough that he can be a starting back in the NFL. And the one guy that I saw mocked to the Jets the other day, who I've not watched a whole lot of, is Cam Akers out of Florida State. Watched a little bit of him, but haven't watched any full games yet. He's, you know, they're expecting him to check in at around 215 pounds, highly recruited guy at a high school, and
not getting any traction whatsoever.
What's that?
He's not getting enough traction, as far as I'm concerned. I think he's extremely talented.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. Like I said, from what I watched, I did like what I saw. I know I looked earlier today, and NFL.com has him their pro comparison is Duke Johnson. So he's a guy, like I said, he's not getting a lot of talk at all. You know, look, he could surprise. Maybe he goes earlier than many are projecting. But I think I want to say Bleacher Report had him going in going to the Jets with one of their third round picks. Wouldn't be, again, it's not where I would say. Yeah, just check now. They have him going to the Jets at 79 with that second third round pick. Again, not a fan of using a pick that early on a back. But I think he's a good player. I think he's gonna have an opportunity at the combine to show that he belongs. Some fumble issues, you know, that's something teams can work on. It, you know, we've seen players before bounce back from that type of situation. That's really it for the backs. I'm looking at the list here right now. The invite list. There's really nobody else we've talked about that I feel like. That I feel we've missed in terms of running backs. I think the better ones obviously going to go earlier, and they're going to go in a range where I don't want the Jets taking a back. But that's why I'm interested in Dillon, because I think he's a guy who could fall a few rounds because he's not, you know, he doesn't have that sort of explosive home run hitter type speed. But as long as he's good enough to play in the league and as a good complimentary guy, he's the one I'm looking forward to seeing. And that brings us to the wide receivers, which should only take about 45 minutes, Alex.
Oh, yeah. Could go on for days about this wide receiver class. And this is going to be one of my predictions. I came up with 3 predictions just for fun. And obviously, I'm probably going to be completely wrong. I am strong about my second prediction, though. Denzel Mims comes in as my number three prediction. And I think that he's going to be so impressive in his combine throughout this process, as long as, you know, knock on wood, he stays healthy throughout everything. And he will be talked about as being a back-end first rounder, which makes me completely sad because he's one of those players that I was kind of hoping nobody would notice or know about, could fall into the Jets' lap, kind of as, you know, certain talented players have in the past. But, Mims is by far one of my favorite outside, you know, the top-tier guys. He's physical. He's an excellent route runner. Everything that you would want, tall, fast, aggressive, especially at the catch point. I saw something from PFF earlier today that no other wide receiver since 2017 has a better catch rate under contested catches. That's a mouthful to repeat. Hopefully you guys understood that. But Mims is definitely going to be somebody that I think is building a solid hype train, and a lot of people are going to be jumping on board after this weekend or after next week. Some other guys that I really, really like is he'll probably be labeled as a gadget player. Lynn Bowden Jr. from Kentucky. He played a little bit of running back, wide receiver, was the emergency quarterback, played as the Wildcat quarterback, actually had some throws in particular series, and also contributed to punt returning and kick returning. I feel that the Jets are in such dire need of talent offensively that it's going to be hard to fill a person to fill in all those positions that I talked about. So why not get somebody that could possibly do it all? I'd probably put him as a day three prospect, but who knows, after this week, after next week, if he tests out well in the 40 and certain agility drills, he could find himself as a day two pick. But that's somebody that I would definitely keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think Mims is a super interesting guy, especially the way he looked at the Senior Bowl in one-on-ones and things like that. He seemed to be getting a lot of traction, and you do worry with these guys who come from these programs where they just heave the ball down the damn field over and over again, and you wonder if guys can do a little bit more than what's asked of them. And in his case, it looks like he can. And, when I go through this list, these combine invites, and I just want to see all these receivers. I mean, it's such an impressive group. But Brandon Ayuk, who we've talked about out of Arizona State, I think he's gonna do well enough that he's gonna solidify himself as a first rounder. I've seen some, not consistently. I've seen a couple of folks put him there. Chase Claypool out of Notre Dame, a big target because the Jets do need, if they're gonna get some receivers, you want to see him grab a. Get at least one sort of big-bodied guy in there who can win some battles one-on-one, but he's a guy who's probably a mid-round pick. He probably would be there in that sort of range where I think the Jets should be looking to grab their second receiver. I want one of the top four picks, and then I want another one outside of that. Gabriel Davis out of UCF. I want to see how he runs. I think he's going to run a little bit faster than some people expect. I don't think he's not a burner, but I think he's going to show that he's definitely got enough speed to be a quality receiver in the league, because I've read a couple different things on him. Some people feel like he doesn't have elite speed. I think when I've watched him, the couple games I've watched, I don't think speed is a question for him at all. Bryan Edwards out of South Carolina, quickly becoming my favorite receiver in this draft. I'm not saying he's the best receiver, but he's just that guy. Every time I watch him, I think this is a guy I want in the Jets. Like this is if I got to pick one guy outside the top three rounds, Bryan Edwards is the guy that I want. I feel like he's a strong guy, can high point the ball, can wrestle the ball away. And he's a guy, he doesn't have elite speed. I don't expect him to shock anyone with his 40 times, but I think his speed is going to be plenty good as well. I mentioned earlier, some of these guys that we want to see because they played in smaller schools. Antonio Gandy Golden, who I talked about, is another guy. He checks in at 6'4", 6'5", and some of the plays he made in college were fantastic, but the question there becomes, again, the level of competition. T. Higgins out of Clemson, another projected mid-rounder. I'm really looking forward to seeing him. I think that he's a guy who you look at this list, I just find myself repeating myself because that's all I, up and down this list, I'm like, that guy could be a starter, that guy could be a starter, that guy could be a starter. And there's so, you just don't generally see this many guys coming out. But I'll just mention one more, and I think, LaViska Chenault, I want to see him run just because that guy's a freak of nature. I want to see what how explosive that guy is, not just the 40 times, but the vertical and all that type of stuff. I think it's going to be interesting. But then Jalen Reagor, who we've talked about, this is a guy that, you know, some people, I did a preview on him on Jet Nation a week or so ago, and some people were, I think I focused so much on his ability to win jump balls that people sort of got the impression that I was saying he can't separate. That's not the case at all. I was just blown away by the number of times, because he's not a huge guy. But, man, he can go up and get it, and, you know, you've seen him rip the ball out of DB's hands and coming away with the ball, coming away with the catch. So I put so much emphasis on that I think a lot of people interpreted that as he can't separate.
Yeah, Reagor was definitely a product of not having great quarterback play either. If anybody goes back and just watches that, some of the plays that they ran, the scheme and the placement of where he had to try to catch the ball, you know, over his head, behind him, on his back hip, just terrible precision passing. And, you know, that had a lot to do with the, you know, his statistics, you know, from 2018 to 2019. So 2019 does not tell the tale of Jalen Reagor.
Yeah, that was the impression I got. So, some of the stuff, it hurt his, in my opinion, it hurt his production, but it helped his case as a draft pick because he had to make so many crazy catches. Saw him getting open and having to, you know, not being able to get any yards after the catch because he's leaping or diving or lunging, just completely off balance, trying to get to these poorly thrown passes. And he's getting to a lot of them, but he's, you know, he's going to the ground as he's making the catch because the ball is so poorly thrown. And I had that thought. I thought this guy's numbers aren't what they should be because he can't catch anything in stride and make a play. So he's another guy. I think if I had to pick two guys, two mid rounders, it would be Reagor and Edwards. Those are the two guys that I would, you know, that jump out at me as guys who I think could absolutely be players. Reagor and Bryan Edwards, I would be thrilled that the Jets came away with those two guys in the middle rounds, middle late rounds. I'm trying to think where they had Edwards mocked because the thing is there aren't a ton of 7-round mocks at the moment, because let's face it, that's a lot of work and not a lot of people are willing to do that. But I think, as a matter of fact, I'm just looking it up now, just take a look. And, I forgot. Yeah, the Bleacher Report 7-rounder actually has Edwards going to the Jets at 68, which I'd be pretty damn pumped about that. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, just such a deep group. We could do an hour show just on the receivers, Alex. You really could. 55 receivers invited to the combine. I think that's got to be a record. That's absolutely nuts. But yeah, those are the guys I'm looking forward to.
Pencil in a bonus show.
I'm telling you,
cover that entire class.
Yeah, exactly. And it would have to be a bonus show that would have to run 2 hours. But everybody, even though it's weird, we know that the guys who run the fastest 40s rarely pan out in the NFL. But it's that sexy thing. Like, you still want to see it. So I know for me personally, I'm looking forward to see Henry Ruggs run, because I think he's the guy who's gonna blow up the stopwatches. So we'll see how that goes. But even though we know the history, you look at the list, you look at the NFL Combine, the list of the top 40 times over the past 10, 15 years. And, yeah, most of those guys just don't make it. It's one of those things. Jonathan Ross, right? Is he, you know, it's these guys blow up the stopwatches.
He missed his whole rookie year and then
played
partially his second year. Actually had 7 touchdowns that season. Then he got injured again, and then last year kind of in and out of the roster and, you know, on and off the field. Because, you know, those speedy guys, they get those lower leg injuries and, you know, some, like, you know, C.J. Mosley, you know, those lower leg injuries are, you know, near the hip and, you know, the lower part of your body can linger longer than expected.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. That's one thing that makes
Ruggs, because he was part of my prediction. My guess this year is I think he's going to beat John Ross's 40 time and run between 4.19 to that 4.21 range, and that's my prediction for the fastest guy in the draft.
That'd be crazy. That'd be crazy. But you do see these guys, these super, super speedy guys, to get these leg injuries. Just that one more thing that's that impressive about Robbie Anderson. Like, I don't recall that ever being an issue with him ever since coming to the Jets. And he's a 4.34 guy, and it's not been an issue. Moving on to tight ends. Is there a tight end you think is worth using a pick on at this point when you look at the fact that they just re-signed Brown? They've got their starters in Herndon and Griffin. They've got Wesco. I don't see a tight end being able to come in and take any of those jobs. To me, Brown is more of a special teams guy. I heard people saying, "Oh, that's it for Wesco. He's gone. He's not going to make the roster."
Yeah.
I'm not convinced of that. I think Wesco can still be a guy who sticks on this roster. But is there a tight end you want to talk about? That's another position that honestly haven't paid a lot of attention to because I just don't see it happening.
That was going to be one of my odd predictions that I was going to put in for the draft. When we start doing that, more of that content in April. But after they signed Brown, I mean, 4 seems to be the max that you should carry throughout the year. And I don't know specifically what he did to impress, but yeah, this is one of those situations where he's got Gase's ear and, yeah, he finds himself with another job with the Jets, thanks to Adam Gase. So,
yeah, I think it's more more special teams. That might
like
be Brant
said,
Boyer.
Yeah, possibly. Maybe he did good on special teams, and Brant wants him back. That could definitely be a possibility. And if they do decide to draft another tight end, then that does not spell well for my buddy Trayvon Wesco, who I'll continue to pound the table until he's not on this team anymore.
Yeah, I think if they go tight end at any point in the draft, that's the end for Trevon Wesco. excuse me, I just don't see it happening. I don't think that's going to be a thing. We will find out in a couple months. But that'll bring us now to the O-line. And, again, we've talked about the O-line extensively, rightfully so. But I'm going to go ahead and throw out a few names, and I'll throw out a few of my own, Alex.
Okay. I mentioned him to you not too long ago. This was a player that only got 6 games in last year and then came down with a hip injury, and it slowed him down a bit, but he still showed good mobility out in space, and that's Lucas Niang from TCU. He is a monster of a man. I think he's another 6'7", 320, 330-pound beast. Like I said, for what is really, really surprising is the size of some of these offensive linemen and how well they can move, because the narrative is usually the bigger, the badder they are, the physical, the stronger. But once you try to ask them to do things like, pull and get out in space or set up a screen, these guys will whiff and miss blocks. This is not the case with Niang. I'm hoping that he is able to overcome all the medical testing. I think that's going to help his stock a lot in this year's draft. He'll have a good opportunity to show that next week. And, if he can come through it, checking all the boxes, he could find himself as an early second round pick. I'm not sure if he's going to be a back end of the first round, but if he slides anything past the midway point of the second round, kind of getting toward that 48 pick where I think we're at, I'd love to bring him in and coach him up and get a monster on this offensive line. And the next player I'll talk about, who I think might be the strongest guy in this class, Netani Muti from Fresno State. He plays interior offensive line, primarily left or right guard. He did have early on, and then they moved him to the inside. And this guy's went to and competed in the state's wrestling championships throughout his high school career. So this guy understands balance and leverage and basically how to throw big guys around like ragdolls. And that's definitely a trait that you can work with. And
the physical nature of him and being somewhat of a mauler. He checks all those boxes. The only big concern with him is his medical history. He did, I believe, have an Achilles injury. I don't know if he tore it completely throughout in his earlier college years, but he does have some red flags according to old injuries in his history. So that would be a concern. But we could go on and on, like you said, with his offensive line, and I'm sure we'll dig deeper as the weeks go by too.
Yeah, that's one of the guys I was going to mention. So I'll start off with him with Mutai. He had an Achilles and he had a Lisfranc. 2016-2018, the Achilles and Lisfranc was in 2019. But just maybe the best interior lineman in this class. And really the two guys, and I'm always weary of taking guys with injury histories. And that's why the combine's important. You know, and a lot, you listen to a lot of former GMs, executives, they'll say that the medical portion of the combine is really the most important part because everything else, you know, you've seen on film what a guy can do. There's not a lot physically that you need to see a guy do that doesn't involve playing football. So to me, it's Mutai and Biadasz out of Wisconsin. If those two guys check out medically and they're both New York Jets after the draft, I would be absolutely ecstatic. I mean, both those guys, I still can't believe, how much Biadasz's stock seems to have dropped since the end of the season. And I'm kind of glad it did. And I hope he does well enough at the combine that he shows that he's worthy of a higher pick than some are saying. I mean, hell no, I don't. I hope he falls to the fifth and the Jets get him there. But in all reality, I think he'll be a third round pick. And I know we always, as much as we talk about the tackles, I'm just so tired of seeing Sam Darnold, really whoever's been under center for the Jets for the last few years, just getting absolutely murdered from guys just coming right up the middle untouched or just blowing past or, you know, running over the guards and center that are in their way. Of course, it got a little better with Jonathan Harrison. But, yeah, give me Mutai and Biadasz. That would be absolutely fantastic. I think they're both going to be really good players. Again, the biggest question is health. I think that a guy that I talked about the other day out of Michigan, you know, you talk about a young player who, you know, has experience, you know, started 28 games over the last couple of years. I think he started 13, 12, and 13, if I'm not mistaken, over the last couple of years. And, you know, a young kid, Ben Bredesen, he's only 20 right now. So he's got 3.5 seasons worth of football under his belt at a major program under a hard-nosed coach in Jim Harbaugh. And I think that Bredesen's going to be a good player. As much as I like Bredesen, I was surprised Mel Kiper listed him as his number one guard in this class, which I thought that was – I was like, wow. Even as someone who likes him, as someone who's, you know, I've been saying for a while now, he's right up there with Biadasz and Mutai as guys that I would like in the middle rounds. And you know, people might say, well, you know, why aren't you talking about the higher touted guys, the Cesar Ruiz, the Lloyd Cushenberry, these guys? I guess I'm kind of looking at it. I'm not expecting those guys to be there. By the time the Jets are picking, if they're there, absolutely. But another guy's Robert Hunt. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Oh, I didn't catch the guy who you just said.
No, I was going to say the other two guys, Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis. Jonah Jackson, I want to watch some more. I haven't watched him at all yet. I heard the folks at PFF the other day say he's like their blocking guard in the class, and they were just saying everybody's sleeping on him, and he's the best pass-blocking guard in this class. So I want to watch some more of him, or I want to watch some of him. I haven't really watched them yet. So Jonah Jackson out of Ohio State. So I'm curious to see what he does at the combine, and I'm going to try to get a look at him, try to watch one or two of his games leading up to the draft. Kevin Dotson from Louisiana won't be at the combine. He was a guy that I was looking forward to seeing, but he wasn't on the invite list. And that'll bring us, of course, to the offensive tackles. We know the big names. We've talked about Jones. Becton, I mentioned as a guy that I'm looking forward to seeing to see how his measurables, you know, how he tests out against some of these other guys. But who are your tackles that you're looking forward to seeing, Alex?
there's a guy from St. John's, Ben Bartsch. I heard he had a really, really good week at the Senior Bowl practice. He'll be somebody that I'll be looking at. We mentioned this Oregon player not too long ago. Calvin Throckmorton seems to be an interesting name that's getting thrown around. Another guy out of Auburn, Prince Tega Wanago. Very, very strong. One of those guys that he may not have the length, but kind of does all the little things right. So it'll be interesting to see if he continues to improve his stock. I know I've heard and seen some mocks where he's kind of in the second to third round range, so possibly day two, day three guy. But someone with a lot of experience that, you know, maybe you find a future left tackle on day two or day three. Maybe he needs just a year to get acclimated, and then he can be implemented in year two. So there's a lot of, you know, interesting prospects coming from this offensive line position group. And there was somebody else that I wanted to mention, but I can't find him in my notes right now. So I'll throw it back to you, Glenn.
All right. Well, unrelated to the draft, I don't know if you just saw this, and most of
Austin
you.
That's who I want to mention. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Austin, didn't love what I saw out of him in the. I try not to judge a guy off of one game, but I think it was their bowl game I watched, and he got his lunch eaten. He looked so bad. I just thought, I can't see taking him. But look, I say it all the time. You can't judge a guy on one game, but that left a bad taste in my mouth. But a little bit of. Not Jets news, but NFL news that hopefully will impact the Jets next year. I don't know if you just saw this, Alex, from Adam Schefter, from his official account, says the NFL playoff structure is about to be changed. Under the current CBA proposal, 7 teams from each conference will make the playoffs with only 1 bye per conference. Sources tell ESPN it would go into effect this season. More to come on that, says Adam Schefter. So 7 playoff teams from each conference, only 1 team gets a bye. That's I don't think there's anything wrong with the way they do the playoffs now, but we'll see what happens there. Just thought I'd throw that out there. So yeah, in terms of offensive tackles, Trey Adams out of Washington. I hope he shows that he has the feet, because I like him. Nasty, mean guy, plays through the whistle, but does he have the mobility to sort of wall off an edge rusher at the next level? We'll have to see. Mekhi Becton, I already mentioned, because the guy is, he really is just a absolute freak of nature that you look at and you think, you know, if things work out, he's the guy you want on your roster. But man, you almost, sometimes I see these guys and I think, I hope he's gone before the Jets pick, because I don't want them to be the ones to have to make that decision, because it's almost like sort of a boom or bust situation. Ezra Cleveland out of Boise State, another guy that I'm looking forward to seeing. You already mentioned Calvin Throckmorton, but that pretty much covers my offensive. Of course, you know, of course, the top guys. Like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, we're all looking forward to seeing how the top guys do. It's those sort of mid-level guys beyond that we want to kind of take a look at. And we are just yammering away here, Alex. I did not realize we're down to how much live time we have left. We have 11 minutes left. That absolutely flew. So yeah, we're gonna have to go lightning round a little. Alex, if you want to talk about a defensive lineman, you go right ahead. If the Jets take one in this draft, I'm gonna vomit. Unless it's a dude who falls like 3 rounds and you're getting insane value, I don't want a D lineman. Get an edge rusher, but I don't want a D lineman. You have any D lineman to talk about,
Alex? I'm on the same wavelength as you. We'll just cross that defensive line right off the list.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. In terms of edge rushers, now, I don't know why they did this. I pulled the combine list off of NFL.com. The edge rushers, they left that blank, and I think they've just thrown them in with the linebackers, which kind of makes sense, because some of these guys really are those, you get those tweeners. But for me, I'll just throw a few out there. Zach Bond, Wisconsin, really looking forward to seeing what he can do. I've seen him projected in the third. I've seen him projected in the first. Early second. Kalaivon Chaisson out of LSU. I almost don't want to see him. I've seen what he's athletically, he's freakish. We've seen the explosiveness. We've seen the spin move. But as I've said, the lack of production worries me. I'm not saying he won't be a great player. It's just it's head scratching. You're like, why is a guy who can do that many things that well on a team that's always up by 50, how does he not have 16, 17 sacks? It doesn't add up. So why that is, I have no idea. Terrell Lewis out of Alabama, another guy getting a lot of praise. I've seen him mocked as a sort of late first, early second round type player. And there was one, no, he didn't get the invite, did he? Isaiah Simmons, of course, they see not an edge guy, but just listed in here with the linebackers. They just kind of threw them all to one group.
Everything but defensive tackle.
Yeah, exactly. But the last guy I'll mention is Curtis Weaver out of Boise State. Productive guy. Just when you watch him, he's one of those guys, he gets to the quarterback and you're like, how's he doing that? He doesn't have the explosion. He doesn't have his production is better than what you would expect. At least for me, it is. And one more guy I want to throw in there, Josh Uche out of Michigan. He's a guy I've seen mocked all over the place. And from what I've seen of him, would be more than happy if the Jets were able to come away with him as a pass rusher to try to answer some of those issues they've had off the edge over the years. What do you got, Alex?
I'll just list them off here. Michael Divinity from LSU. Now, I know that there's some red flags that come with him, and people are projecting him to plummet on draft day. So it'll be interesting to see if they take a flyer on him on day three. Willie Gay Jr. from Mississippi State looks like he just plays with 100% intensity every snap. Again, somebody that had some inner school issues and was suspended for a few games throughout the season. So possibly a head case there. Who knows, you know, how he will do if he tests out well and does the interview process well. Maybe he improves his stock. Malik Harrison from Ohio State. These guys that I've noticed play inside and outside. So, you know, maybe a plug and play for, you know, a possibly 4-3 base or, you know, maybe a hybrid 3-4, you know, overset or something like that. I really, really like Kenneth Murray. I know that some people are a little reluctant about his awareness and his tackling form, but I don't know. I see the motor. I see him dropping back into coverage and his eyes are glued to that quarterback. And I think his footwork looks decent, but sometimes what I see, what other people see aren't the same. And I get that. And lastly, I was going to talk about Curtis Weaver as one of my guys. So you and I are on the same page there. And somebody just had intrigued me because of that wild PFF draft. Troy Dye out of Oregon, being talked about as one of the most athletic linebackers in this class. So I don't know if these are, you know, quote unquote, air quoting edge guys, but you know, I think Greg Williams showed a lot last year that he can mix up his packages and get to the quarterback in various ways. It's just a matter of what kind of athletic kind of linebackers he thinks that can do what he's trying to implement. So maybe the Jets don't prioritize edge for the umpteenth year in a row and go for a versatile style linebacker.
Yeah, I think if you're going to find a guy who can do a lot of different things for Greg Williams, then I can get on board with that. But in terms of a pure D lineman, don't want to see it. Moving on to DBs. Again, Jets need a corner, even if you like what you saw from Bless Austin last year. Bryce Hall, a guy out of Virginia, is a guy that I'd like to see as a consideration. Lamar Jackson from Nebraska, I like his size. I think I would have liked to have seen him play in a conference that throws the ball a little bit more, you know, get some better competition. But he's a guy who'll get a chance to show a little bit of what he can do come combine time. Troy Pride out of Notre Dame. I think I saw him mock to the Jets the other day. I forget. There's too many damn mocks out there. Expecting him to check in at 5'11". I'm curious to see what the approach is with the new regime. Do they want bigger corners? Do they want, you know, are they okay with, do they want a couple of 6'2 guys on either side? Or are they going to go smaller there? We'll have to wait and see. And I think if the other guy I wanted to talk about, I probably mentioned him already or last week. Two more guys, actually. Kendall Vildor, who I've talked about from Georgia Southern, and A.J. Terrell from Clemson. Both guys that I think are under the radar. Terrell's not so much under the radar. I think it's underappreciated. And Kendall Vildor probably, he opened some eyes with his performance at the Senior Bowl. I thought he was a guy that might be sort of a late round, even maybe undrafted guy. And then he had a huge week. And got some attention there. So, and in terms of safeties, listen, again, if we'd be looking at like 7th round backups, not really something that this team is going to be looking at right now. I think when you're talking about quarterbacks, when you're talking about safeties, when you're talking about tight ends, you might see one or two undrafted free agents, but I just can't see the Jets being in a situation where they use picks at those spots. So this will be the last position, Alex, and then we will wrap things up. What do you got?
A couple of intriguing guys here. Quarterback out of Mississippi State, Cameron Dantzler. I'll have my eye on him. I really want to see where Trayvon Diggs kind of falls. Somebody that was talked about as a guaranteed first rounder, now being rumored that, or seeing rumors that he might be in the 2nd round, a day 2 guy. So we'll see what Diggs can do. Jeff Gladney might be my favorite corner out of this class, outside of the top tier. And two guys that I liked out of the nickel that I've mentioned in recent weeks, LaVert Hill out of Michigan and Amik Robertson out of Louisiana Tech. They each played inside and out. I think that their play style would be best suited in the nickel cornerback role. And obviously we know that we don't have that position filled this year unless if we bring back Brian Poole. So those two guys will be on my radar until we do something with that position in free agency.
Sounds about right to me, Alex. That'll wrap things up for us. We're down to like we got a minute live airtime left, so we will call it a night.
One thing.
What's that?
Happy birthday, Jet Nation, for a great 15 years. And I'll leave it to you, buddy.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'll use that last minute. Jet Nation, turn 15. Check out the forums if you haven't already. Best football forum on the internet. They do such a great job, such a dedicated team. I know for me personally, I joined Jet Nation the week they started. I've been a member from day 3 or 4, whatever. But really, just it's been a great sanctuary. A nice escape from our reality, because sometimes reality can be pretty boring. I know, you know, I've mentioned on this show before, and stationed in different spots around the world and overseas and various places throughout the country. It's tough to find Jets fans, and man, that was my way of staying in touch, staying up to date, and being able to talk to fellow Jets fans about a team that drives us nuts. But here we are, you know. So JetNation.com. Started by some flunkies 15 years ago, and it all came together, I think, in a International House of Pancakes, as the story goes, and it's worked out all right. They've done pretty well for themselves 15 years, and what was it, 7 million page views and a million posts, or 7 million posts. The numbers are ridiculous. So hop on in, join JetNation.com, jump into the forums and jump into the conversations. Thanks so much for tuning in. That's Jet Nation for this week. We'll catch you next week, Jets fans.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Jet Nation Radio. Glenn is at AceFan23, and Alex is at NYJetsLife24.
Until next time, go Jets!
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.